listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of the Miles to Go podcast. We're going to mix up the format a little bit today with the major Marriott announcement that we've gotten this week. We expected it to come. We weren't 100% sure what was going to be there, but there's a ton to digest. I'm sure we're not going to get through all of it, but I asked Gary Leff, who writes the View from the Wing blog, to be on with us. He's already got a very detailed post up about it, a ton of stuff to cover. So we're going to roll through probably about 20 minutes worth of highlights and lowlights, and we're certainly both available to answer questions via email or Twitter or wherever you can find us online. Gary, thanks a bunch for jumping on with me to digest everything.
Hey, there's a lot here, so there's a lot to talk about. We should really get started.
Yeah, definitely. And I didn't have a great place to start because, like a kid in a candy store, there's so many different things to talk about. So I'm gonna lump it all on you and say, hey, what are two or three things that you think are most important for folks to be aware of, right after this announcement?
So at the very top level, right, when Marriott and Starwood merged, Marriott acquired Starwood, there was a lot of consternation about what this was going to mean. People who were Starwood elites were Starwood elites because they chose that sort of on purpose because of the Starwood value proposition. Starwood has been really generous with elite benefits. They were a real driver early on with redemptions to make standard rooms available anytime that they were available for cash. And Marriott had its ubiquity of properties, certainly in the U.S. People chose Marriott because wherever you go, there's a Marriott that you could earn your points and you could spend your points anywhere. But they weren't really as strong on the elite side. And I think that what they've done with the new program, roughly speaking, and there's a lot of detail and some people are going to be happy, others not quite as much, but they've taken the bulk of the Starwood Elite program and stapled it onto a more generous earn and burn proposition for hotel stays than Starwood had before. Although I do think that the Marriott earn and burn proposition isn't going to be quite as good as it has been going forward. So taking Starwood Elite, Marriott earn and burn, but dialing it back a little bit. At the things that we're going to be most interested in looking at from the elite standpoint, both that some benefits that Starwood has offered with fewer nights are going to require some more nights and even at the very top end minimum spending, which makes a little bit of sense because the footprint is larger. It's easier to give them your full wallet share. And frankly, there's just going to be a lot more elites in the combined program that compete for benefits. And so the higher thresholds are almost required or at least expected. Stay-based qualification goes away. I don't think that's a huge surprise.
No,
Starwood
not
really
at all.
Starwood was really the only one left doing it, right? Hyatt got rid of it a year ago. And the credit card, while the Chase credit card is going to earn faster than before, once you adjust for the new point system, I think the American Express card is going to earn a little bit less than before. So people with credit cards are going to look at new strategies there too.
Yeah, those are all highlight things and definitely a lot to unpack. I think let's start with let's start with, I love the comment of stapling on the Starwood Elite to the Marriott earn and burn. Let's talk a little bit about earning, and then obviously that's a good segue into credit card earning as well.
Yeah, so the Marriott basically laid out that their points were equivalent on a 1-3 basis. They did that right after the merger, and it's basically right. So one Star point transfers to 3 Marriott points. That's going to happen. If you don't do it on your own, linking your accounts, it's going to happen automatically. And then going forward, they use this new system. But earning, roughly speaking, will go up for most members, at least all members who are gold and above. So right now, if you take the base 2 points per dollar spent that you earn at Starwood, that's 6 Marriott rewards. Well, your base earn is going to stay like Marriott at 10 points per dollar. So even those base Starwood members go up, Marriott stays constant. About the only people that really lose are Marriott Silver's going down from 12 to 11, but otherwise everyone goes up at least a little bit. So, you know, golds at Starwood were earning 3 points per dollar, like nine Marriott. Marriott people in the 25 to 49 night range, which wasn't quite gold, were earning 12. They were Silver's before, they'll earn 12 and a half. And people earning 50 to 74 nights, you know, go up to 15 points. And folks who are over 75 nights go up to 17.5 points per dollar. The golds and above, I think, see roughly a 20% increase in their earn. But on the other hand, when you see that, you also know that you're probably going to get higher redemption prices too. I think these are going to be in line. We get some points inflation on earn and burn. But the thing to really be careful about is your accumulated point balance becomes worth less in the future than it is today when that happens. So, you know, back as I've always said, you know, earn your points, burn them in the same period. Don't hold them for some future time when you're, you know, when you have time to travel. You know, earn them, spend them, and then earn more under the new system, and then inflation doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, it's interesting because the first thing that I looked at as we were going through all the material was the points earning by tier. And I hadn't yet seen some of the other developments, which I'm sure we'll talk about and you've already detailed on your blog. But the first thing I looked at was, you know, a Platinum 50 night going from the equivalent of 9 Marriott Rewards points now to 15 Marriott Rewards points in the new program. And the first thing I thought of was, gosh, I'm really not going to like what I see on the redemption side.
Yeah, it has to. I mean, it's got to match because they're not just going to increase their spending. And Marriott's even said in their earnings calls that the cost of the program to hotels overall is going down, which is part of how they're going to make the hotels happy with the new program. Some of that is just funded by a new credit card deal, but they're not just going to completely over-index this where they're going to give you a lot more and charge the hotels less. It has to come from somewhere. So you know that more earn is going to mean more expensive redemptions.
Yep, no, I definitely agree. I think that's a good place for us to take a quick pause. We'll drop in a quick commercial break here, and we'll come back to talk about some of the other highlights of the announcements. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
Today's episode is sponsored by GoGo InFlight Internet. With their new blazing fast 2KU service being installed on over 2,000 aircraft, you'll have faster than ever internet speed on board. We've got some great prize packs to give away from GoGo. Stay tuned to the end of the episode to learn how to win. Get GoGo. Travel happier.
And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast with Gary Leff of View from the Wing. We covered points earning by tier in the new Marriott Rewards program where we've combined Marriott and Starwood. We've got a couple other high-level areas to cover. And Gary, I think that's a great segue into how folks are going to redeem. And I know we don't have the whole picture yet, but let's give folks a little bit of an idea of what things are going to look like on the redemption side under the new Marriott Rewards consolidated program.
So here's what's going on. In the new program, we're going to initially have 7 categories. Now, a couple things happen, you know, August 1, and then we have more changes next year. The first thing to know, as you say, we don't know everything, which is means that we don't know what hotels are in which category. And so the entire value proposition is ultimately predicated on you know, which hotels you're able to redeem at what price, and we only know what the chart itself looks like. So roughly speaking, let's just talk about that chart. We're going to have 7 categories. You know, Marriott today has 9 categories, and you know, above category 1, every category is more expensive today. A Marriott category 1 currently costs 7,500 points. That's going to be the same August 1 onward. Then we start getting increases for 2 through 7. In fact, starting August 1, a Marriott Category 7 hotel is going to be 60,000 points, and that is, you know, 15,000 points more than a Category 9 is today. You know, so the increases range from 2,500 points at a category to 25,000 points at a category. But again, we just don't know which hotels are which. What we do know, what David Fleck told me, was that there is going to be a rebalancing. Some of the values in big cities under Marriott today are going to get a little more expensive. We're going to see increases, I think, in New York, for instance, where Marriott's been a great value and Starwood hasn't been. What happens then next year is we get a new Category 8 at 85,000 points, and we also get off-peak and peak pricing for every category level. So a Marriott Category 1 is going to go down to 5 off-peak, and a Marriott Category 8 is going to go up to 100,000 points when it's peak. We know that the number of hotels, the hotels are going to have like a roughly equal number of high and low season prices. So, you know, but ultimately what happens there is an open question, right? Because, you know, what hotels cost that much? Then the other thing is that I don't think these award categories fully represent the highest end Starwood properties that are considered all suites. So right. Starwood historically has had their highest end properties, which, by the way, one benefit of the merger is that Marriott members now have this opportunity to use their points at these top end places that they didn't before. Well, those hotels that are all suites cost double than a standard room, and they're not just going to cost the pricing that is here on the charts that have been released. They're going to have an increased premium as well. So we do see awards getting more expensive. I think this is still the earn and burn overall is a win for Starwood members who will get more value out of their dollars in hotels. There's going to be a bit less value than today for Marriott members, but Marriott members do get a whole bunch of new elite benefits that they didn't have before. And because the increased earning in hotels will offset the price increases somewhat, I'm most worried about people with big accumulated points balances, where those will become worth less, I think, under the new system.
Yeah, I do think that big balances will be worth less under the new system. Some of that, I think, will depend on both of the variables we don't have answers to now. You know, where these properties end up in for new categories. Certainly at the margins, the lower categories move up less in total point volume, but at the top end, as you mentioned, going to 100,000 points per night at a peak property in the top category is pretty daunting. So those are things I'm sure we'll be waiting to see. I think the other interesting element here is the credit card tie-ins that you've shared, and the fact that with the change in how folks will be earning on credit cards, in hotel stay may actually become a little bit more important, especially if you were a big user of the Starwood Preferred Guest American Express card, since that's adjusting going forward.
Right. So on the credit card side, the Chase cards are going to basically double their earn for unbonus spend. You're going from one Marriott point per dollar to two. That's a big increase. On the other hand, though, we're going to have parity on earn across the Starwood cards, the American Express cards with the Chase cards, and that means that American Express is going to be offering 2 points per dollar on unbonus spend, not three, which is the equivalent to the one star point that it earns today. So we're going to be earning less on the Starwood American Express than we have historically. So I think that's going to be especially meaningful for folks that use that card as a way to earn miles in the myriad of programs, right? Because the Marriott program is keeping the lucrative mileage transfers. So today, 20,000 star points gives you 25,000 airline miles in a number of programs. In the future, it's going to be 60,000 Marriott points will still get you the 25,000 airline miles. So that's great. But the Starwood American Express no longer becomes this great value way to generate those points to transfer to miles. On the other hand, though, good news is that cash and points remains. We don't have the full details on those, what the chart looks like, although it's going to be similar to what we see today. Travel packages remain two. Experiential redemptions remain and even grow. That was something from the Starwood side, SPG Moments that Marriott introduced. They have a big emphasis on all the things you can do with your points besides hotel stays that are not just buying toasters, but rather leveraging their connections, right, to give you things you couldn't otherwise. I mean, Ed, you've done that.
Oh, I mean, I bought my wife a tennis lesson with Andre Agassi at the U.S. Open, and then we got to hang out in the SPG suite. It's to this day still my most valuable redemption, and those were some of the things I was most afraid of with the merger, was that Marriott would not understand the significance of those sorts of experiential benefits. So I'm really happy to see them continue. I certainly hope they continue at the same sort of level. You know, that you could certainly dilute those as some of the other hotel programs have. I think it's hugely valuable that they're keeping the airline points transfer. I'm a little bit surprised. I thought that was something that would hit the cutting room floor. You know, what are your opinions as far as the elite status changes that we've seen?
Well, what we're basically getting is the Starwood Elite program, although some of the benefits are a little bit harder to earn. And that is great for Starwood members who were afraid that the benefits they've gotten used to would go away. You know, Marriott has not historically been particularly good with suites, for instance, especially in the U.S. They haven't offered breakfast to elites across all their brands or at resorts. They're still not getting to all their brands, but they're taking the Starwood program more or less and, you know, and stapling it on. Now, a couple things that are not quite as good. Golds, Starwood Golds, who used to get guaranteed 4 p.m. late checkout, except at resorts and conference hotels, are now going to have 2 p.m. subject to availability. So there's a devaluation there, but for 59 elites and above, they keep the 4 p.m. late checkout that they've gotten used to. They introduce breakfast on the Marriott side. It's going to be at 23 brands, so we do get it at your Courtyards and your AC hotels. You don't get it at Ritz-Carlton's. They have eliminated, under the new program, the resort exemption, which means that breakfast will apply at resorts. And what they've done is they've taken the Starwood model of providing it, which is it is an amenity choice at check-in, so if there's no lounge, you can choose breakfast instead of points. Marriott elites may not love giving up their points in order to have breakfast, but it's a reasonable trade-off to save costs because, you know, folks who are on business travel expensing it to a company aren't getting as much value. They may not care about every time they can choose points. You may not always have time for breakfast. You can choose points, but they're able to fund breakfast even when you care about it most. I mean, I think taking time out for breakfast is not something I would ever do outside of vacation. I'm, you know, working on the morning while I'm eating, either in the club lounge, taking something back to my room. You know, I don't really have time to spend over a long leisurely breakfast during business travel. But suite upgrades extend, and that it means that you're going to get those same standard suites at check-in if they're available that Starwood's gotten used to. So I think that's a huge boon to Marriott Platinums and above. And they even keep suite night awards. So priority for upgrades when you care about them most, but they're only going to give 5 after 50 nights and 5 more after 75. And I think that helps to balance the supply and demand. So hopefully they'll be able to deliver on those 5-day advance upgrades a little bit better than Starwood has at a lot of properties. So upgrades are kept. Your 24-hour check-in is kept, but it requires 100 nights. And ambassadors kept at 100 nights. However, ambassador status requires not just 100 nights, but $20,000 in spend.
Yeah, I thought
that's going to be the kicker.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Just because essentially what you're saying is that the your typical elite needs to have greater than a $200 ADR or average daily rate at properties. And actually, you know, if you think about it, probably significantly higher in that if you are staying 100 nights at Marriott over the course of a year, some of those are going to be award nights, and so those are going to reduce the amount of quote unquote qualifying spend that you have. So this is a fairly high end customer that's probably either spending, you know, over $300 a night, or is consistently dining or using the spa or other services in the hotels or planning meetings or things of that nature.
Right. What's striking to me, though, is the proliferation of select service brands, limited service brands, and especially in Asian markets. So, you know, limited service brands in China, right? The people who are incredibly frequent customers, where, you know, some of the greatest growth is occurring, are never going to hit this.
No.
They'd have to do, you know, 300 nights a year, not 100, if they were going to earn this status. So I do think it is an interesting move to tie the 100-night benefits to $20,000 US in spend. That, you know, on the other hand, from their view, that's what it takes to be that especially valuable customer. I think that's wrong, because I do think that it is very market specific. While some of these benefits can be costly to provide, on the other hand, what we're talking about is, you know, how much are you able to move the needle on spend? If somebody is doing, you know, 200 nights a year in your hotels at the prices that you're offering, at the even better hotels in the markets where they're staying, you want that customer as opposed to somewhere else, sending them somewhere else. So I think that, you know, the international markets may not make the most sense to have this kind of spend requirement. But, you know, that's for them to decide who's important. To me, it's most important that they then deliver consistently good service to everyone once they've decided you're an important customer. And that is one thing that stays in the new program, by the way, which is that Marriott's the only one left that, as a matter of policy, will honor your elite benefits regardless of booking source. So third-party bookings actually get benefits. Hyatt got rid of that a year ago. That continues in the new program. So that's, you know, I thought that was nice to see.
Yeah, I think I've been an ambassador for a number of years, and I think the big thing there with the program is that there is a high amount of variance in what both the agents and the hotels provide. I'm also a lifetime Hyatt top tier globalist, and while there's some variance, the recognition is significantly higher. And so I do think that I think it's possible there was a conversation somewhere in a room at Marriott where it was, hey, you know, we have so many people that are at the ambassador level now, we need to find a way to trim it so we can try to offer better benefits for what we're spending on this program. And this was the way they came up with. I agree that it's a pretty big hurdle for them to achieve. You know, rewinding to a couple of the things that you mentioned that I'll be really curious to see how they work out. You know, extending suite upgrades to multiple levels of elite status, and also suite night awards. You know, I've written about this a handful of times. I'm pretty sure you've written about it as well, that the suite night awards now with Starwood, they were a great, meaningful change. I loved I think they were well-intentioned in what they were trying to come up with, and the benefit's been almost useless since it came around. I mean, I let mine expire almost every year, and so you know, it's great to have it there. They rolled out some other gift options if you didn't want the suite night awards. You know, I still think all of this comes down to, you know, some form of revenue management or enforcement by Marriott to have properties actually open up this availability.
One of the interesting things that I learned is that something new that Marriott's doing this year with their hotels is they are compensating based on elite satisfaction scores, and they hadn't done that in the past. And I think that's one of the interesting ways they're going to be getting hotels on board with delivering the promised benefits. So, you know, it is going to be interesting to see. The Suite Night Awards were really revolutionary, and entirely apart from the ability to express preference about when you were going to want the suite, in advance of check-in, the upgrades were being processed centrally. So the idea was to take the discretion away from the hotels. It didn't always work as well in practice. Some hotels played games with inventory. And the biggest problem, of course, was the demand for suites. Everybody wanted them at the Westin Maui, not the Sheraton Albuquerque. So if you wanted to use your suite, in other words, at the Sheraton Albuquerque, you could do that pretty much any night of the year. But everyone wants them in the same places, and so demand outstripped supply independent of the process of working with hotels. So it'll be interesting to see how Marriott does this. And how splitting up the number to different night tiers works relative to their portfolio. Although I would expect that they're going to suffer the same problem, that everyone wants to use their suites with family on vacation at high demand resort destinations over school break periods rather than off season at your basic Marriott or Courtyard.
Yeah, and I do think that the vast majority of people want to use them at those upscale properties. I have tried to use them at decidedly second-tier properties, Sheraton, Harrisburg, Hershey, and a couple of other like moderate Sheratons around the country, and had very little success as well, and yet I still keep choosing them. So there's something to be said for the fact that I keep picking them as opposed to one of the other benefits each year. I guess I'm hopeful that I'm going to win the lottery at some point.
I'm happy with a top-floor club room at the Sheraton, Harrisburg, Hershey, with the balcony overlooking the Target.
Don't forget about the friendlies.
Yes.
Well, there's a ton more to cover, but we're just about out of time here. Any last nugget to offer folks that they need to be aware of, or things that they should be looking forward to when we get more information in August?
I mean, look, I was thrilled to see that the Marriott United partnership survives the new program. So, you know, we're going to see still United status for top tier members here. We're going to see United elites getting Marriott status, which means that the Delta partnership eventually goes away. I think that happens in July. And the China Eastern and Emirates partnerships leave at the end of the year. So, you know, figuring out which partnerships stay, which ones go, there's just tons to dive into. You know, I've written a lot, but I've also had extensive conversations with executives and asked tons of questions. So if you've got any more questions, I mean, send them my way.
Absolutely. And Gary, as we jump out here, tell people where they can find you.
Viewfromthewing.com.
There you go, folks. Gary Leff, View from the Wing. He's already got plenty of information up on the blog. I've got stuff up on mine as well. There's going to be lots more posts coming out, I'm sure. And we may even revisit this on the podcast over the next few weeks as we get more information. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it in August when we get more clarity on the award charts. Gary, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Ed. Really always a pleasure.
And we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. I've got Summer Hull back with me from Mommy Points. And our goal today is to talk about how, not all awards are created equal, if you will. There are plenty of ways to get to Europe. I prefer going in business class. So does Summer, when we can afford it. And lots of folks will tell you it's over 100,000 miles round trip to get there. But I was really intrigued by a post that Summer wrote a few days ago where she managed to score awards for under 100,000 points or miles round trip, and I thought it'd be interesting to have her on to talk about it. Hey, Summer, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I totally agree. The best way to go to Europe is when you're laying down asleep.
Absolutely, and that can cost as much as, at least in the United Star Alliance world, that can cost you as much as 140,000 United miles, if even at the saver level, if you're using a partner award, and obviously much higher at standard levels. But you managed to score awards for 88,000. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so like you said, not all award charts are created equally. And, you know, my recommendation for anyone, as soon as you get a couple redemptions under your belt, is to start digging in for those award chart sweet spots, because every award chart is going to have something it's better at than others. So the ANA award chart, ANA is in the Star Alliance. One of its award chart sweet spots is business class from the U.S. to Europe for, as you said, 88,000 miles round trip. Some people's eyes roll in the back of their head when they hear ANA because they don't fly a Japan, you know, based airline regularly or ever. But they are a one-to-one transfer partner from the Amex membership rewards program. So this is a super relevant award chart for just about all of us.
Yeah, that's right. It's a big key thing that people don't think about. They look at the partner charts when they sign up for these cards that have flexible currency, and they say, "Oh, good, I fly United Airlines. I'm going to go with Chase Ultimate Rewards." Those partner airline and partner hotels, more so the airlines and the hotels, can be really valuable. And your ANA example is a real relevant one in terms of saving on those points.
Yeah. So we ended up booking. United's being super duper stingy on business class awards out of Houston these days. You have better luck if you're based in Dulles. Dulles seem to be the shining star with award availability right now. But we're here in Houston, so we weren't able to get flights the entire way this time around from Houston. We'll have to start in Chicago, but small price to pay, and we'll get to spend the day in the United Polaris Lounge in Chicago, which is a bonus because I still haven't been. But we'll be flying on SAS business class over to Scandinavia. They have lie-flat business class seats that look awesome to me.
Oh, they are. It's a really great product. I got to fly it last year to Copenhagen, and I was really, really impressed with it.
Good. So I've heard mixed things on the service, but yeah, the seats look awesome, which is what I care about the most. And hopefully we'll get a good experience with service, but really, I care about the seat. So we'll fly over to Stockholm, and then they include stopovers. So they'll fly us for free between Stockholm and Copenhagen to spend a few days there. And then we will come home through London. We'll have an SAS flight to connect us to London, and then we'll be actually on one of the extremely rare United Business Class Saver flights from London straight to Houston, which is my preference. I'd rather fly right into Houston than clear customs in some other city, have to go back through security, and then fly to Houston. So all of those are in business class. The transatlantic flights are both lie-flat seats. There were no fuel surcharges. That's the one hitch with ANA, is with some airlines you're going to hit fuel surcharges, but you won't with SAS, you won't with United, you won't with Turkish, you won't with Air Canada. And so between those four alone, and there's a few others that aren't bad either, but those, usually if you've got some flexibility, you have a decent shot at finding what you want in lie-flat seats to Europe. So for 88,000 points that we transferred in from Amex each, and a little over $100 in taxes, we're going to fly tickets that we would never, ever, ever be able to afford, because they'd be thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, not only thousands of dollars. We've talked about both of the reasons why this is relevant, but let's just make sure we dot those I's and cross those T's so people really, you know, get the point here. It's not just that Summer's saving a lot on each of the redemption, and we're talking about a family of four here, so that, you know, multiply the savings times four. But then to take it a step further, she couldn't find what she needed on United. So in this case, this trip doesn't happen if she doesn't use the partner awards. Or if it does, they're stuck flying in coach, or they're having a couple people in business class or a couple people in coach. So they make a small compromise on their outbound routing to go to Chicago first, but they get business class seats for four, and they get them for less miles, which is a win in this game, especially in today's day and age where it's a lot harder.
Oh, totally. And as you know, you know, the product often from some of these partner airlines is better than what you're going to find on a lot of the U.S.-based airlines anyway. I mean, the U.S.-based airlines are up in their game in some respects, but they still are lagging in a lot of others. So, yeah, I would have preferred to fly straight from Houston, but, you know, going through Chicago and getting to try out SAS, awesome bonus.
Yeah, I was, again, surprised by their catering. The staff was great. I think you'll find the experience is going to be significantly better than what you'd normally find in United Business Class.
Totally. And then we'll come home United anyway, and it'll still be great. All I really care about, give me a seat that lays down, give me something to eat at some point, and we're good.
Yeah, those are all important things, especially keeping the kids on something of a regular sleep schedule, getting them to sleep on those flights.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not about being fancy and needing, like, caviar and champagne and all of that jazz. It's about finding a way to rest on your way to and from your trip, so you're not blowing, you know, a day or two on the front and back end if you can avoid it, especially because a lot of our trips are shorter. We're not going to Europe for a month generally. We're going for, like, less than a week. So it really allows us to maximize our time there to find a way to rest on the way coming and going.
Yeah, I remember the first trip we took Catherine to Europe, as she was probably only three at the time, and she decided to stay up for the entire flight. We couldn't get her to go to sleep, and then for our entire Italy trip, she was up every day at 3 o'clock in the morning Europe time, and it was like, ugh.
No!
Well, Summer, thanks so much for jumping on and sharing that one with us. You know, I tend to have a blind spot when it comes to American Express membership rewards, and you are the person who always points that blind spot out to me.
Yeah, it's totally worth having some next time you see some big sign-up bonus from Amex getting, you know, 50, 75, 100,000 points. If it makes sense for you, pull the trigger, because there's a ton of great ways that you can put these points to use. And they have some partners that aren't necessarily partners of Ultimate Rewards or Thank You Rewards, and ANA is a perfect example of a partner chart that I love to use Amex points for.
Awesome. We'll tell people where they can find you before we bug out.
Totally. So website is mommypoints.com, and then online I like to hang out a lot on Twitter @mommy_points. So come holler if you need some help finding your next award chart sweet spot.
Thanks, Summer. Talk to you soon.
Totally. Thanks, Ed.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. And we're back. I'm recording the final two pennies today super early in the morning before I head out for a bunch of business meetings in Northern California. I booked a hotel room at a Marriott property in town because when I booked it, we hadn't gotten the announcement yet, so I wasn't 100% sure if I'd need to start picking up some Marriott nights for a status level I might want to hit. Doesn't look like that's going to be the case. I've already written a bit about it on the blog, and I'm sure we're going to be writing a bunch more about Marriott and Starwood, throughout the week. There's just a ton to cover, and apologies if it sounds like I'm losing my voice. It's been a rough couple of months on the road pretty much every week since the beginning of the year. So, you know, without going deep into the details of the Marriott and Starwood program, I think that's where we're going to focus the final two pennies. It is the news of the week, and it's probably going to be the news for a number of weeks. The big detail that was missing was we really don't know what the award chart's going to look like in terms of where properties will slot in. So we don't know how much it's going to cost to redeem for our favorite hotels past August. And you know, so once we have that information, we'll have a lot more of a feel for what the new program is going to be like. You know, suffice it to say, it's going to cost more to stay at your favorite hotel. And maybe that won't be true across the board everywhere, but they're giving out more points to pretty much every elite member in the program, and the program got bigger by adding all the Starwood elites to the Marriott program. So bottom line is those points have to go somewhere. They're on record as saying that this program will save money for the hotels, and the only way to do that is to ratchet up how much it costs us to redeem. So we could hit this, you know, this stage of teeth gnashing and complaining and lamenting how, you know, things used to be better. And sure, they used to be. You know, these currencies, hotel points, airline miles, you know, they go down in value over time. And, you know, I'm not going to give you the standard, you know, make sure you burn your points as quick as possible line. But I am going to give you my one little bit of advice today in the final two pennies. Don't sweat this. Don't sweat the Marriott changes. Figure out how to use them to the best of your advantage. But also keep in mind that loyalty has changed. So it might not make sense for you to be loyal to Marriott anymore. It might make sense for you to jump to Hilton or Starwood or IHG. Take a look at all the programs and make sure that you make the best decision for you for 2018, 2019, and beyond. The goal here is we know that the hotels and the airlines are going to continue to change the programs. So loyalty in itself has changed from long-term loyalty to transactional loyalty. And we see that with Marriott actually eliminating one of their most valuable lifetime status tiers. And so we need to think transactionally as well. What's going to be best for us in the future? Maybe that is Marriott. Don't get emotional about the decision. Make sure that you're making the decision based on what you need going forward, not what Marriott might have taken away from you earlier this week with the announcement. Figure out what's best for you. Figure out how to maximize it with credit card spend, with your travel, and save up enough points to have that next dream vacation. Don't worry about what's behind you. Worry about what's going to happen in the future. That's a full wrap on episode 9. I hope you enjoyed it. A little bit of a shorter episode with a different format. You can find links to all of our discussion topics and our guests on our website at milestogo.boardingarea.com. If you're enjoying listening to the podcast, I hope you'll help me make it grow. You can do that by rating the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to, like iTunes or Google Play, and also subscribing to it by rating the podcast, leaving a comment, and subscribing to it. You help move us up the ratings, and more people will see the podcast if we're higher up the ratings. Special thanks to our sponsor, GoGo In-Flight Internet. They've got faster Wi-Fi rolling out on a bunch of planes this year and next, and I'm super excited about that. Also excited to have them supporting the podcast. We should have another giveaway coming up very soon. That's a full wrap. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, we've got miles to go.